From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. Doug Fabrizio. This probably happens all the time for songwriters, but for the band Salazar, their first album began with a dream. It was band leader Alexander Wood's dream. He was on a cliff looking down on a mermaid. Couldn't see her face, and it was one of those dreams where you want to reach out, but you can't. The album is called Saudade. It's a Portuguese word, and it's one of those words that doesn't really have an English equivalent. It's about that sense you get when someone goes away and you know they're not coming back, or the feeling you have, that yearning for something you know you'll never have again. Today in the program, Salazar is joining us as we continue our local music series. They'll be with us in studio to play and to talk about Saudade. Join us after the news. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're getting back to our series on local music. And this time around, we have the band Salazar in the studio with us, playing from their debut album called Saudade, which is a Portuguese word for an idea that can't be directly translated, but it's kind of the organizing principle for their album, if you can put it that way. So today, we are talking about their music and also about a band of musicians known as Dirty Provo. We'll talk about that a little bit later on the program. Let me introduce the band. Salazar is Alexander Woods on guitar and vocals, Kyle Hooper on keyboards and backing vocals, Mike Dixon on guitar and pedal steel guitar, Landon Young on bass, and Brett Meisenbach on drums. You'll be able to see Salazar when they play on Saturday. They'll be at Velour Live Music in Provo, of course. They'll be along with the band Bat Manners and others, and we'll give you details about that as we go along. Welcome, everyone. Thanks very much for being with us.
Cool. Thank you.
So I want to jump right in this is actually the first piece on the album itself. And Alexander Woods, if you would sort of set this up for us. So this is an instrumental piece, really. And I'm wondering, are you thinking about it kind of like the prologue for the album, like the way to set up the sensibility of the album
sure,
in
yeah.
some way? Yeah?
Yeah.
So what's the story? What's the it's called Os Marineros Estão a Partir, which means the sailors are going to leave or about to leave.
Uh-huh. Yeah. It's just an image that I like that kind of stems from where I got the whole idea from the album, which is with this lady singer from Portugal. Her name's Amália Rodrigues.
Yeah, we're going to come back to her, by the way.
We'll get, yeah.
I want to play a little piece. But this is it's kind of a story embedded in this little instrumental piece here? Or an image?
I don't know. It's more of an image. I wouldn't call it a story. It's just mariners leaving their families on a seashore. That's what I see in my brain. But yeah, it's nothing too complicated other than that.
Oh, it doesn't sound complicated. It sounds simple. In fact, it's an instrumental. Would you play it?
Yeah.
Great. Marineros Estão a Partir. When did you, Alexander Woods, when did you first hear the word saudade?
I was in a world music class at UVU and had a really good teacher, and he was explaining, we were kind of on the Iberian Peninsula part of the world. So we had talked about like flamenco in Spain, and then we moved over to Portugal, which has this thing called fado. We started talking about a musician, a really famous Portuguese musician named Amália Rodrigues, and kind of like the essence of fado music being saudade.
Yeah.
Which is this thing that you were talking about. It's this longing of, this yearning for a loved one.
We pulled a clip from Amália Rodrigues. This is Fado Português, I guess. That's the piece that we'll play. Mm-hmm. What?
This is actually the first song that I heard of her, too.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Well,
this is the first time I heard.
Let's just play a little sense of this, because I want to get a sense from you about what it is that captivated you about, mm-hmm. About everything. Because I think what you've said is that when you hear the voice, you immediately get the idea in some way.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah.
For me.
Yeah. So what are you hearing there? I mean, so like, are you hearing this, not exactly the words that she's saying, but how she's singing them?
Yeah, I'm going to be honest with you, Doug. We didn't hear it through these headphones.
Oh, you didn't? Okay.
I'm so sorry.
That's okay. That's
we
okay.
We were imagining it, and it was beautiful.
Yeah. Well, it is the one thing you heard, so without
I, yeah,
having
I know
heard
it from
it.
Experience.
Yeah.
There's a lot of passion and love in her voice,
yeah,
but also a lot of tragedy in her voice. There's a deep sadness, a deep rich sadness to her voice.
Yeah,
is that a really strong voice too? You know,
yeah. But it's that interplay between joy and sadness that captures the idea of saudade.
A little bit, yeah, yeah. I mean, you're daydreaming about what will happen in the future.
Yeah,
and you're sad that it probably won't work out.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But that's kind of it.
So, Saudade, the song that you wrote, mm-hmm. let's talk about that.
Okay.
I want to read some of these lyrics here and have you sort of talk about them. And we don't have to process it and break it down if you don't want to, but this is a dream, right? Saudade, this song is, and the album is the essence of kind of a dream that you had, or an image that came from these dreams?
Uh-huh, yeah. This song in particular, yeah. Yeah. You want me to talk about that?
I do.
Basically, there's two parts to it. And when you have dreams, you know, you wake up and you're like, you know, how did I have a dream about flying? And then, you know, and I was flying above mountains, and then the next second I have like barbecue on my shirt. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do.
Something like that. So for me, the two parts to this dream was I first kind of had this view, much like the first song kind of, mm-hmm. but it's kind of at dusk. I was up on these cliffs looking down Oceanside, and there's a rock, big rock there, and there's like this mermaid there that kind of captured my heart in a sense.
Yeah.
And I couldn't really see her, and I couldn't get to her. And it's that feeling of, you know, I wanted to get to her really badly, but I couldn't. Fast forward to the part two of this dream, I'm at my dad's house here in Utah, and I'm at this like family reunion or something, I don't even remember, right. Family gathering, yeah. You know, and I'm there with a girl but I can't see her face, but I know she's
with you,
with me.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And I remember kind of having this jolt of worry, like, oh shoot, I forgot something. And it probably was like, you know, I forgot like the potato salad or something, right. Not important, but I was really freaked out about forgetting it. And, I turned to her and she kind of, in a sense, like smiled and kind of calmed me down. Mm-hmm. And I felt very at ease about everything. That's kind of it in a nutshell.
Yeah.
Dreams are kind of hard to talk about, like, you know.
Yeah.
Retell.
But isn't it kind of like music in the sense that it's hard to say, oh, this is a story about this thing and this means directly this. I mean, music is, at least for a lot of people, it's like poetry. Like, mm-hmm. It begins with a kind of an essence of an image. The lyrics sort of mean this, but they sort of don't. I mean, they're just, I mean, is that how you conceive of, like, this song in particular, but also music in general?
Yeah, I think it's, for me, it's kind of hard to escape a personal story.
Yeah.
I don't like to spell it out,
sure,
necessarily all the time.
It seems like it's a little bit of both, probably.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I like abstractions.
Sure.
But they need to be personal to me, otherwise
yeah.
It won't mean anything to me.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So that's kind of what it is, I guess.
Well let's have you play Saudage. So there are a couple of things. I think people will get a sense of that image. You talk about how at high tide, there was a note that I wrote down, and I let it sink down. And then they'll see this maid, no face, you say, just kind of this voice in space. What was the note that you wrote down that you let sink deep down? Can you say what that is, or that's just an image?
No, I can't.
Yeah, it's okay.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Not because I can't, but I guess I'd rather not.
Yeah,
yeah.
Okay.
But yeah.
It's too personal.
It's a little too personal.
Yeah. Is that true with a lot of these songs?
No, not necessarily. But that specific thing is kind of, yeah.
Got it. All right. I really got on something. I need to have to talk to you about this after. Here's Salazar playing Saudage.
One, two, here we go. Thank you.
Salazar, Alexander Woods, Kyle Hooper, Mike Dixon, Landon Young, and Brett Meisenbach. On Saturday, they're playing with a group of other bands, including Bat Manor and Fossil Arms. They'll be in Provo at Valour Live Music Gallery. The doors open at 8. The band's debut album, Saudage, came out last year. We have details about all of that on our website, radiowest.kuer.org. We'll take a break and be back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we have with us the band Salazar, which is Alexander Woods, Kyle Hooper, Mike Dixon, Landon Young, Brett Meisenbach. They're going to be playing this weekend on Saturday at Valour Live Music Gallery, and we'll give you the details about that. We're talking about their debut album, which came out last year, Saudage. And we have details about all of that on our website, radiowest@kuer.org. Alexander Woods, you're playing the guitar, but did I get this right? You started sort of on the piano at home.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I started playing piano when I was really little and kind of taught myself guitar. I learned a lot of theory on piano, so it was kind of easy to translate that over. Mm-hmm. And then as far as like other instruments, it's kind of, I don't know, I mess around and learn how to do it and...
Your dad loved electric guitar, and he had a guitar that was like in the corner collecting dust or something?
Yeah, well, he bought this guitar, actually.
Oh,
this,
really?
Yeah, this is his guitar. And he used it. He's going to be laughing about this right now. He used it for like a week.
Yeah.
You know, bought this really nice guitar. And
he
this
had really good intentions.
He really did, yeah. And he got like a Joe Walsh tutorial video.
I've seen those, actually. Yeah.
And I just remember like watching him, and he's like, "How did they do that?" Like, and he's like trying to bend the note, and
like this is the middle aged dude who's kind of like, "Man, I want
yeah."
To
he's
love
just trying
guitar.
To pick up a new hobby.
Yeah.
That's all it was.
Right.
And you know, it went to the closet after about a week or two, and then fast forward, you know, 2 or 3 years to when I stumbled upon it, and then I just played it a lot, and he was like, "Yeah, I mean, you can play it if you want, you know, you can." And then I played it so much that he was like, "Yeah, just take it, have it." So yeah,
so you did your first album when you were 17, not with Salazar, I should say. I mean, mm-hmm. Was it like a solo album for you?
Or the first one, yeah, yeah, and it was pretty instrumental. It was instrumental.
Yeah.
Yeah. And...
I mean, I've heard it described as experimental. Is it like a concept album? Because you like incorporated sounds and stuff. Like, how would you describe it?
Yeah, I wouldn't call it like a concept album. At that point, I was... I don't know. I kind of don't like the word experimental. Yeah.
Why?
Just because... And I'm not saying you said it wrong.
No.
I'm saying for me, I just... I don't know. I feel like it's thrown around, kind of like
you weren't experimenting. You knew.
Well, like it's a hoity-toity word,
but I was experimenting.
Yeah.
So maybe in this sense, I was experimenting. But anyways, yeah, it was very cinematic. You know, like I really liked a lot of post-rock stuff at that time too. You know, Explosions in the Sky and like things like. And then other simpler, more minimal stuff like Alluvium, I really like him. Or like Max Richter is a composer I really like. So it kind of, that's what that album kind of sounded like. It was a lot of piano and sounds and things, yeah.
So this album, does it have that sensibility in any way? Like, is there, like there does seem something cinematic about some of the pieces to me.
Yeah, I think... Definitely. I still really like that kind of music. This time around, I definitely wanted it to be a little bit more lyric-based. Mm-hmm. But yeah, for the most part, I think you're right. Like, it's definitely got a cinematic quality to it.
Let me ask you about the song Ball and Chain. So I feel trepidatious about mentioning lyrics because I'm worried about the ones you want to talk
don't
about.
Worry.
You don't. Okay,
don't
so,
worry
but
about
that's okay.
It.
I mean...
Sorry.
There's this, you say, all things I've made are locked up and caged. Like, is that a kind of a personal expression? Is that a sense of frustration? Because you also say, where would they be if I had a ball and chain to drag? What are you getting at there?
All I'll say about this song and most of the words in this song, it's very much kind of regretful feeling song. You know, there's a lot of regret and a lot of, you know, you make certain mistakes, you build something up, and you make one bad decision and then it all kind of goes away, kind of thing.
Yeah.
And that's kind of like the gist of,
yeah,
of most of that, you know?
So it seems like the arc of this album in some way is one or maybe a few relationships that didn't go so well. Like, they began great and they had this sense of longing, and then this thing happens and then it ends.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Yeah.
Here's Ball and Chain by Salazar. Saudage. It's Ball and Chain. So what does the Dirty Provo scene mean? Dirty Provo. I guess the term initially was like an insult, but then you kind of took to it?
Yeah. I kind of want to turn it over to these dudes and start talking.
Turn it over to these dudes. What?
Yeah, there's been multiple groups referred to as Dirty Provo that a lot of us have been a part of. And then I think finally after the second or third wave, we decided to do something with it. And a lot of our friends decided to collaborate. And we started releasing zines and music and helping our friends put things out and just kind of trying to create a DIY community for artists.
But what was Dirty Provo like that you weren't living up to the sort of white establishment?
Provo? Several years ago, there was a house venue called The Compound that a lot of us lived at. And it was kind of a space for people who made like really loud music or were kind of gross people, you know, punks and rock and roll kids and whatnot, you know, freaks to society.
Right.
And there were cooler people who were like throwing, you know, cool dance parties and, you know, getting expensive haircuts. And they immediately just started calling us all Dirty Provo because we were literally dirty people to them. Right. And then that went away.
Yeah.
And then our friend group kind of found another space to do that stuff, and an entirely separate group of people started calling us a Dirty Provo again, but who were just like the first group. So instead of trying to, you know, change, we decided to embrace it.
Very serendipitous.
What's that?
Very serendipitous, Landon says.
What is the, how do you all describe then the Provo music scene? Like, do you feel like you fit? I mean, you guys aren't even, most of you aren't. I mean, I know, Alexander, you're in Linden, right? You're in Utah County still?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
What's strange is, like, most of the, quote, Dirty Provo people.
They don't live there anymore.
They don't live in Provo. Like, most of them are up here in Salt Lake. So it is kind of strange and, you know, kind of sucks for me.
It's a memory of who we were.
Yeah.
You're not in Provo either.
I mean, we started it when we all lived in Provo, though, so.
Yeah.
But nobody's in Provo
not a lot of
now.
Foresight there.
But there is kind of like a little label thing that Adam and
Jacob
Hall, Adam Klopp, normally plays with us. He couldn't today. That they've released a few things on like the Dirty Provo label.
Yeah.
In that sense, the Dirty Provo thing still exists. But as far as people being in Provo and that being part of the Provo scene.
I think now it's just more of like a label. You know, we're all in Salt Lake, but we still have like, you know, all of our ducks in a row. And, you know, Jacob makes music compilations of local bands and he's expanding to outside the state. And I think we're just trying to kind of showcase, you know, what we have to offer other people and artists coming through the state and what we have to offer as well to them.
Is the Provo music scene, like I can't quite fix where sort of Mormonism fits in all of that, because a lot of times when we've had bands from the so-called Provo music scene, whatever that means, you know, some of them are Mormon or formerly Mormon or sort of in the in-between parts of being Mormon, and they interact, and a lot of the songs they sing are about belief, and a lot of the songs are about trying to break it to their folks that they maybe don't believe the way they used to. I mean, a lot of this stuff, and I'm wondering if you guys sense that too. And you don't have to get personal about what you believe or what you don't, but are you noticing that? Are you seeing a trend away from that? You know, like it's really fixed on belief and stuff like that? Or do you even relate to that concept?
Guys?
I can say that in Provo, we would sort of joke around that if a band had like a good first show at Velour, for example, that it was their family home evening group that had come to support them.
Right.
And so I think that there maybe is a little bit of that going on where people, you know, make these strong associations through that community and then sort of have a built-in fan base based on that, which seems to be the case with some of the, you know, up-and-coming Velour bands, maybe.
Yeah. But you don't see yourselves in that place?
As far as FHE groups coming to see us, no. No, or I mean, just in terms of... No, we don't...
You know the question, right? Do you see what I'm saying? I mean, I guess the question is, do you see yourselves as being part of that scene at all anymore? Or ever, if you ever were, I don't even know.
In terms of like playing Velour and stuff.
I think at best we feel like outsiders.
Okay.
It's been said of Alex that he doesn't play by the rules at Velour.
Whoa.
Or just in general. Just in general, like people are always just like, oh man, Alex Woods, that guy doesn't play by the rules.
Oh, it's
like,
I mean, we've had bands, we're currently in bands even that, you know, have big shows at Velour and it's like a great space to play. But it's also like we've never been a band who really relied on that space. And that seems to be a thing a lot of bands do. You know, they'll have a big show there once a month, and then they'll never play anywhere else, never tour, never release anything. It's just kind of a place to play for a big built-in fan base if you just kind of want to have a good show.
Yeah.
I feel like I don't know. I feel like I'm kind of an in-betweener. I feel like, because if you think about it, I've played a lot of shows at Valora. I haven't played very much outside of that space.
We've been on tour, man.
We've been on tour, but which is great. And I've played like a lot of shows up here and like house shows and things. But you know, I would definitely say that I don't know if I'm like necessarily. Like, I don't know. Maybe I'm. Maybe Salazar is like a little bit of an outsider.
You like literally someone said you don't play by the rules. I'll tell you after.
Oh my gosh.
There's a lot to talk about after.
If you played by the rules, you would be a celebrity by now, but you refuse to do it. So it's kind of on you, not them, for setting up that strict, rigid, like rigid.
They set call
of
you
guidelines.
The bad boy of the Wasatch Front, I hear.
Oh, is that right? All right. I don't even know how to pronounce this word. Promiscuous kiss. Like, I actually looked it up this morning, and the Google thing said, do you mean promiscuous? Like, no, that's not what I meant. Where did this song come from? And this word?
Can I ask you, what do you think that word means?
Well, I mean, my initial sense was promiscuous, I suppose, and there's some twist on it.
Yeah.
And then looking at the lyrics, I don't know, it's about this, I mean, there's this line where you say, it feels so good being out of that trance. So then I thought, oh, it means that he's in this sort of love trance, or he was sort of captivated or hypnotized by some sort of relationship. I have no idea.
Yeah. Okay. That's super interesting. I don't know. For me, it's kind of actually the reverse of that. It's like the trance being like I'm in my head about this relationship, if you will, you know. And instead of being one foot in, one foot out all the time, it's like, it feels so good to like know what I want. And this is, you know, that's, I think that's kind of where that's going.
Great. You play it?
Yeah.
You want to count it?
Yeah.
Salazar, Alexander Woods, Kyle Hooper, Mike Dixon, Landon Young, and Brett Meisenbach. They're playing at the Bloor Live Music Gallery in Provo on Saturday, along with a bunch of other bands. We're talking about their debut album, Saudage, which came out last year. We'll take another quick break and be back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio here with Salazar, the band, with Alexander Woods, Kyle Hooper, Mike Dixon, Landon Young, Brett Meisenbach. We're talking about their debut album, Saudage, which came out last year. I'm really interested in these two songs. I call them the Shenton songs, Daniel Shenton and Samuel Shenton. When did you hear about Daniel Shenton? We'll start with that one.
I honestly don't remember. I stumbled upon it on like YouTube. There was a YouTube clip of something about the Flat Earth Society, and all of a sudden there was this like interview with Daniel Shenton, and it was
who believes the Earth is flat.
Yeah. I mean, he says he does.
Yeah, says
and
he
sounds really convinced too.
Right,
that's
right.
What was so shocking. It was like, wow, like this guy really believes this.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how I found it.
And the song is about, it's interesting because they're kind of the two parts, or at least that I saw it. On one hand, it's this sense of he's so sure. His critics are blind, as you put it in the song. This is how I believe. But then there's this other part where he realizes maybe he's too proud. I don't know. I mean, what's going on in for Daniel Shenton in this song, I guess I should ask.
Yeah, so, I mean, obviously I kind of spin my own narrative onto it,
yeah.
And I would say that this song and this song that follows it on the album are definitely more of, I guess, a narrative kind of thing,
yeah,
a story. And it's almost like two people talking in a way. I paired them together
right.
So that would almost feel like it.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think.
Well, play it, and we'll talk a little bit more. Okay. This first part.
I need to tune really quickly.
Okay, go for it. You really like this song, though, right? I mean, you're really proud
of
this song.
Yeah, I actually do like this song.
Unbearable. And then
Salazar, Daniel Shenton is the name of that song. So we actually don't have time for Samuel Shenton because I want to play Truman. Are you guys cool with that?
Totally cool.
Yeah.
So, but mention the Samuel Shenton part because it's so cool. It's like a counter to that. So this is Samuel's response. It's not like his father, although that's kind of how you conceived the song.
Yeah.
He's related.
It's written like it is.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And he's up in space or he's in another realm. In some way, talking to Daniel, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, kind of like a call and response kind of thing, and really,
you like that idea. I mean, that is, I mean, you've talked about, and we didn't get a chance to spend much time with that, but in the album, in some ways, you play one song, and then the other song is kind of a response to it in some way.
Yeah, actually, very much so. I think I ordered it that way, and most of the time, the first song. I guess it would be all the odd-numbered songs have some kind of idealistic, like I guess, kind of like dreamy or hypnotic kind of mentality to it.
Yeah.
In the lyrics.
Yeah.
And then the other ones are coming from a place of
reality,
grounded reality.
Yeah.
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 And so yeah, that's, I guess that's it.
I love. The song Truman, Burbank, California. Because this is like, this is because you like that movie, Truman.
Yeah.
And like there's this really beautiful image at the end where the character Truman smiles. And I'm guessing that's where, because one of the first lines in the song is warmth on a smile. Is that where it comes from?
Yeah, it's actually, so there's a few moments where Truman smiles in the movie.
Yeah.
There's the one at the very end. But that's that. I'm thinking of, in my mind, there's this moment where he's on the sailboat by himself,
yeah,
and everyone's looking for him.
Yeah.
And I think it's after this crazy storm, right?
Right.
And it's right before he runs into the wall.
Yeah. No, that's it.
He's looking.
Yeah,
you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, okay, no, that's what I was thinking about.
He's
yeah.
just kind of, you know, he's got his face up and the sun's
it's beautiful.
Hitting his face. And yeah, I like that image a lot.
Well, here it is. Salazar playing Truman, Burbank, California.
Warmth on a smile that only knows he's not a child. With a piece of every face, hardly guiding his way. Makes me feel like it's real. Makes me feel like it's real.
Salazar, Alexander Woods, Kyle Hooper, Mike Dixon, Landon Young, and Brett Meisenbach. They're playing Saturday at Velour Live Music Gallery in Provo. You can get details about that on our website, radiowest.kuer.org. Thanks very much, guys.
Thanks so much, Doug.
Yeah.
Radio West is a production of KUER News. We had technical help from Lewis Downey, Adrian Moranville, Tim Slover, and Michael Havey. The program produced by Benjamin Bombard and Elaine Clark. I'm Doug Fabrizio.